WGXC is a listener-supported community radio station, and it is also a new platform for presenting innovative experimental works on the air. Tune in, WGXC 90.7 FM, Agra, Hudson, Catskill, and points beyond. Listen to special programs of performance, words, sounds, and other rare and delicious items. Transmitting the arts all day every Saturday, and weekdays after midnight. Here is there. Radio lives on in our minds and hearts.
You are listening to Human Machine, a program that airs each Saturday on WGXC 90.7 FM. Research in various scientific fields examine a speculative next stage in human evolution. Many predict an imminent human transformation based on increasing computer processing speed and manufacture, which will merge technological and human architectures. In this series, we will present projects and research about the horizons of the human machine. The program alternates weekly between Jeremy Kelly's curation of machine systems influence composers and Maximilian Goldfarb's assembly of materials to depict the convergence of humans and technology. Episodes will be thematically arranged to cover topics such as autonomous vehicles, medicine, sexual relations, space and habitation, nanotechnology, slavery, warfare, labor, bioresearch, prosthetics and agriculture, all areas examined in relation to our subject of human-machine advancement.
Traveling for such a long time now. When are we going to be home?
Soon, Chaim. We'll be there soon. But there's still time left to continue our learning. We were discussing the laws of Passover.
Please, Father, would you mind if we learn something else?
Oh, not that again. There are scholars twice your age who aren't ready to study the secret teachings of the Torah.
But I'm your son, and you saw it happen. You were there when the golem was made.
Oh, hold the chupfen! Got my cats. The horses need a rest.
Very good, Zalman. Zalman, my son and I will stroll ahead. Walk the horses a bit before feeding them.
Yes, Rebbe.
Father.
I know, Chaim. I'm thinking about it. Before you can learn about the golem, I must first tell you about the man who made the golem, my saintly teacher and father-in-law, Rabbi Yehuda Lowe. Your grandfather.
The Maharal.
Yes. Let's go back to the first night of Passover in the city of Worms, Germany. The year was 1513. This was the home of Reb Bezalel, a righteous and learned leader of the Jewish community, and his wife, who was in her seventh month of pregnancy. As Reb Bezalel was conducting his Passover Seder, outside, in the dark street, two sinister figures crept towards the house. Two men determined to destroy this family and all the Jews of Worms.
There's his house now.
There's so much light coming from it. Are you sure we can do this without being seen?
Everyone's busy with their celebrations. No one will notice a thing. Just open the window to the cellar.
All right.
Now take the child's body out of the sack and lower it through the window.
This'll fix them Jews.
Wait a second, you fool! You forgot to cut the kid's throat! It's got to look like they killed him for his blood, for making their matzos!
It's no problem. I'll just take my knife and...
Oh! What's that? Oh! They must have spotted us. Stuff the child back in the sack. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Hurry!
I'm hurrying.
They're right behind us.
Cut around the corner. We'll lose them.
Hey! Now, where are you characters running in such a rush?
Well, officer, we're...
And what's in that sack? Stolen goods, I'll wager.
You didn't
help, officer.
What's going on here?
Everybody keep an eye on these two while I check out what they've got in this sack.
You don't understand.
I think I understand all too well. Oh, my God. It's a dead child.
And so the blood libel attempt was foiled. The men were sent to prison.
What happened to the people from Reb Bezalel's house who were chasing them in the first place?
They weren't chasing them. At that very moment, Reb Bezalel's wife had gone into labor. They were running for the midwife. Before the night was over, the Maharal was born. Even before he came into this world, he had saved the Jewish people from the horrors of a blood libel.
But what about the golem?
Give me a chance, son. By the time the Maharal had become chief rabbi of Prague, the whole world knew of his greatness. The blood libel still continued to plague our people every year around Passover. But now, the Maharal felt he was in a position to combat them.
And so he created the golem.
No, son. He didn't create the golem yet. First, he petitioned the head of the Catholic Church in Prague, Cardinal Johann Sylvester. And the next time Cardinal Sylvester was passing through Prague, he paid a visit to my father-in-law.
I've looked forward to meeting the distinguished Rabbi Lowe for quite some time.
I take it you must have received my letter.
Yes, it delighted me. For years I'd heard of your brilliant intellect and scholarship, and now it would appear you want to put it to the test.
I have requested an open debate, so that all may come to understand that a blood libel has no basis in fact.
I must tell you, your request comes at an opportune time. 300 of our most learned scholars will convene in Prague next month. Why don't you come and debate them then?
The Cardinal's confidence in my abilities is flattering. But one rabbi debating 300 Catholic priests can hardly be considered fair.
Ah, but unless you debate the entire assembly, there would be those contending that their questions had not been answered. Doubts would always remain.
Tell me, will your conference last the entire month?
Yes.
Then do this, if you will. Each day, for 30 days, have 10 of your priests prepare their questions in writing. You, Cardinal Sylvester, will present their challenges, and I will respond to you.
Excellent.
And so the great challenge was arranged. The Maharal directed the Jews of Prague to assemble in synagogues and to say the entire book of Psalms each of the 30 days of the debate.
So that God would help.
That's right. The men of the church began by asking about profound theological questions in Jewish thought.
And the highest of all worlds is called Atzilus, the world of emanation, where everything is godliness. But the purpose of creation is to reveal godliness in the lowest world, this world, known in the Kabbalah as the world of action. This can only be done when man rids himself of his evil inclination. With good deeds, we can control evil, but only with the esoteric wisdom of the Holy Kabbalah can we transform evil into good and ultimately turn every curse into a blessing.
And so it went for 30 days. Each day, the debate became less philosophical and more argumentative.
There can be no truth to the contention that God broke his covenant with the Jewish people. A covenant is an eternal bond, the ultimate expression of love, a love which is not dependent on the behavior of those involved. Yes, when we reject his Torah, God punishes us, but abandon us? Never.
At last, they addressed the question for which the debate had been set up in the first place.
The next question, Rabbi, concerns the ritual murder of innocent Christian children. Rabbi Lowe, is it not true that when the Jewish people make their Passover matzos, they mix Christian blood in with the dough?
Could the people whom God took out of Egypt and brought to Mount Sinai in order to give them the commandment, thou shalt not kill, kill in order to bake the unleavened cakes which are baked to remind them that God took them out of Egypt? No. Judaism strives without compromise for dignity, for human decency. We are forbidden to eat any loathsome thing, including blood. If an egg is found to have even a tiny drop of blood, that egg is forbidden to us. When we prepare our meats, the greatest care is taken that no blood remain. And as for these Passover matzos of ours, they are forbidden by Jewish law to contain anything other than flour and water. No, a It has never happened that blood was used for the Passover matzahs. It never could happen, and it never will happen.
You have spoken eloquently, Rabbi Lowe, and I for one am satisfied...
Your Eminence.
Yes, Father Thaddeus, what is it?
With your permission, I wish to come forward and speak.
This is in violation of the terms of this debate.
That is true, but...
With all due respect, Your Grace, this matter is far from settled. It may be true, as the learned rabbi suggests, that Jewish law forbids the use of blood, and that his people were commanded not to kill. Nevertheless, there are those Jews who are ignorant of their own laws, and worse, who willfully violate those laws, such is the case with those vengeful Jews who spill Christian blood for their ritual Passover bread year after year.
He's right.
Rabbi, have you an answer to this?
Cardinal Sylvester, I heard no question, only another accusation. In truth, the debate was concluded before you young priest spoke. Good day.
The following night, I was awakened by Avraham, the Maharal's servant.
Rabbi Katz, please.
Avraham, what's the matter? What time is it?
It's the middle of the night, Rav Katz. Your father-in-law has asked me to summon you to his study.
I'll be there straight away. Seated there were my saintly father-in-law and his most learned student, Yaakov Sasson.
Forgive me for disturbing you both at this hour, but it has been a most unusual night. Early this evening, I requested help from God through a Shiloh's Chalom.
A dream request?
Yes, among the many secret teachings of the Kabbalah is this mystical formula. Before I slept, I wrote the Kabbalistic name of God on parchment, placed it beneath my head, and prayed for a revelation to help deliver us from the blood libel. When I awoke, I found this. Read it.
Atah bara golem dovek hachomer. You create a golem made of clay. V'sigzor zedim and cut off the wicked. Chaval torfer Yisrael. Woe to the destroyers of Israel.
My beloved students, these 10 words are more than a divine command to create a golem. Contained within them are the secret names which will give us the power to do so. But now we must prepare ourselves. Soon we will have created a living being from clay.
For the following 7 days, we purified our souls, fasting by day, immersing ourselves each morning in the river, rising at midnight to recite psalms and meditate upon Kabbalistic names of God. And then, on the 7th day, 2 hours before dawn, the 3 of us headed deep into the forest by the banks of the River Moldau.
Were you frightened, Father?
Frightened? Of course not. I was terrified.
This spot will be fine. The clay by the bank is smooth and soft. What we are about to do must remain a secret, known only to the 3 of us. Will you both promise not to breathe a word of it to anyone in my lifetime?
Yes.
Yes.
Then we are about to create a living man of clay according to the secret wisdom of the Kabbalah. In each of us, one of the primary elements of earth, water, fire, and air is dominant. Rabbi Yitzchak, my son-in-law, in you it is fire. Rabbi Yaakov, in you it is water. And it is air which predominates in my nature. All 3 are needed in order to draw life into the 4th element, this lump of earth.
The Maharal took his walking stick and drew the outline of the figure of a man in the soft clay, taking special care with the face and the fingers and the toes.
Now, Reb Yitzchak, starting at its feet, circle around him to the right and recite the 10 word verse. Do this 7 times.
Ator, Bora, Golem, Dovuk, Achomer, Sigzo, Zedin, Chaval, Torfe, Yisroel.
As I completed my 7th circle, the figure on the ground began to glow red hot, sparks flying into the dark sky. I stood back in utter dread.
Now, Yaakov, it is your turn.
Ata bara golem dovuk hachomer.
As he walked, the glowing figures seemed to cool. Veins and sinews appeared along the body of the creature. The hair of a man of 30 appeared. Nails formed on his fingers and toes. Suddenly, the two-dimensional figure took on the three-dimensional form of man, and the Maharal began his seven circlings.
And he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life.
His eyes are open.
And the man became a living being.
He's breathing.
He's alive!
Rise, Yosef. Stand up on your feet. God commanded us to create you from the dust of the earth in order to guard the Jews from the evils that they suffer from those who hate them. Reb Yaakov, dress him in the clothes you brought. If I command you to walk through fire, you will obey, and you will not be burned. If I command you to leap off a tower, you will obey, and you will not be harmed. No waters can drown you. No sword can slay you. You are invincible.
That night, three men had walked into the forest. By daybreak, four men walked along the riverbank back to the city of Prague.
Was the golem powerful enough to do anything?
Everything but speak. The power of speech is given only to a human soul. The Maharal explained to us that he had drawn into the golem the spirit of a creature mentioned in the Talmud, named Yosef Sheida. Though half man and half demon, he had often helped the Talmudic sages in times of trouble. Now, later that same morning...
Yehuda?
Perle, my good wife. Good morning.
There's a man sleeping in your study.
He's a poor mute with no place to stay. His name is Yosef, but people call him Yassel.
You have a soft heart, Yehuda. But how do you know he's honest?
Trust me, Perle. He may appear to be a brute, but he is a man of great abilities. And I must warn you that he's here only to assist me in rabbinic affairs and is not to be used for household duties.
Whatever you wish, dear.
Her intentions were good, but it happened once that she forgot herself. It was a few days before Passover, the busiest time of the year for any Jewish woman, and she needed to fill the water barrels from the well.
Yassel, these water buckets are just too heavy for me to carry all the way up to the house. Would you mind doing it for me? Yassel, don't just stand there like a lump of clay. Passover will soon be here, and there's much to be done. So take these buckets down to the well and fill them up, and then bring them back and empty them into these water barrels.
With a long wooden pole across his shoulders and a bucket dangling from either end, Yosel carried out Perla's command, then sat down on a stool in the corner of the kitchen.
Yosel, one trip is not enough. Keep doing it. Keep doing it.
Yosel did exactly as he was commanded. The only problem was that he wasn't commanded to stop, and he kept on pouring water into the barrels long after they were full, until the water spilled over onto the floor and out into every room of the house.
Yosel, you're flooding the house! Yosel! I said you're flooding the house! Yosel! Are you out of your mind? Yehuda, come quick!
What is this? Yosel, I command you, stop already!
It was firmly established from this point forward that Yosel would be put to work only to protect the Jewish people.
As soon as the Passover holidays are over, Yosel, you will begin patrolling the streets of the Jewish neighborhoods. If you see any suspicious activity, you will take any action necessary to stop it.
The strange bearded mute became a familiar sight in the streets of the Jewish quarter. Anyone looking to cause trouble suddenly found himself confronted by the golem's piercing black eyes. A single menacing glance was enough to strike terror in the intruder's heart.
You mean he didn't have to fight them?
Well, for a while, Yossel's presence was enough to protect us. Then, a few weeks before the following Passover, a terrible plot began to take shape.
Darling, what's gotten into you all of a sudden? You've been sitting in that chair brooding all night.
That Jew miser wants me to pay back his loan.
Well, it has been 2 years. And if it hadn't been for that loan, we wouldn't have a butcher shop.
And I wouldn't be 2,000 crowns in debt. He wants his money back by the end of this month.
Well, then pay him. Surely we're doing well enough.
Oh, shut up.
Where are you going?
Stefan, I want to talk to you.
So talk.
How would you like to make 50 crowns?
Yeah?
There was a little boy that died a couple of days ago. I want you to help me dig him up.
What do you want with a dead kid, eh?
I'm planning to get even with a certain Jew named Meisel.
So, listen, that's risky business. 50 crowns ain't enough.
All right, then 100.
The butcher planned to hide the body on Meisel's property and accuse him of murdering the child for his blood. After they had dug up the corpse, they headed for the slaughterhouse.
What are we doing here?
We can't just carry a body into the Jewish quarter. They have that mute guarding against such plots.
You believe those stories?
I've seen him. But it doesn't matter. I've got the perfect way to smuggle the body in. You ever seen anybody kill a pig before?
No.
Well, watch this. Come here, fatso.
I don't think I want to watch.
The butcher wrapped the child's body in an old prayer shawl he'd stolen and stuffed him inside the pig's body after he slit the child's throat.
Now, if anybody stops us, we're just delivering a slaughtered hog.
Who would stop us? There's no one out this time of night.
You say something?
No, I didn't say nothing. Hey, there's somebody out there.
Don't worry about it. It's probably some drunk.
Somebody running after us.
Get away from that. It's none of your business what's in there.
He found the body.
Yeah, well, he'll be sorry he did, because now he's gonna die. Whoa! Get him, Stefan.
Look at his face. We caught the eyes of a demon. You can keep your money. I'm getting out of here.
Come back. Come back. Oh, who needs him? Come here, you. I'm gonna break you in half.
No, no. Put me down.
What kind of a monster are you? Take this.
No, no. I won't let you down.
No more.
Yossel the Golem delivered the butcher and the bloody evidence to the police station. The terrified butcher confessed and pleaded with the police to believe him that he hadn't murdered the child.
What happened to Yossel the Golem?
He slipped away and resumed his patrol just as if nothing had happened. Word spread fast that the Jews had a strange and powerful mute who could stop any attempt at persecution.
That must have been the end of the blood libels.
Not quite. In the years that followed, there were several more. In fact, the last blood libel threatened to be one of the worst.
Really?
This is it, Inspector. This is where we saw the Jewish gravediggers burying the body.
Are you Meshuggie? We never buried such a body and we never would.
My wife and I saw it with our own eyes.
I swear to it, Inspector.
You two stop digging.
If you insist.
And there, in a shallow grave at the edge of the Jewish cemetery.
Look, Inspector, I told you.
He is me.
Give me a hand with this.
Get him up here. Oh, get him up.
It's the body of a young boy wrapped in a blood-stained sheet. His throat's been slit.
Out of my way!
Oh, my God! It's our brother!
No! Oh, no!
Hold on, Koslovsky. This boy's face is hardly recognizable. How do you know it's your brother?
Our brother had lost 2 fingers on his right hand.
Yeah, look at the body. People of Prague, look at what they've done to our little brother.
Are we going to let these Jews get away with this?
Koslovsky, I won't have you inciting a riot here. These people deserve equal protection under the law, and I intend to see that they get it.
Inspector, we know who did this murder.
Ginz,
the Jew our brother worked for.
Who is it?
It's the chief of police. Open up, Mr. Ginns.
What is this all about?
You and your family have been accused of murdering the young Koslovsky boy.
Accused? By whom?
This is impossible.
Mr. Ginns, the boy's body's been found buried in the Jewish cemetery, and I'm afraid we're going to have to search your house.
You'll find nothing.
Maybe so, but if it's all the same, we'll start with the cellar.
I don't know what you're looking for, Inspector, but practically no one ever comes down here.
Inspector.
What is it, Sergeant?
Right over here. Clothing soaked with blood.
Aaron Ginns, I arrest you for murder in the name of the Crown.
But I'm innocent! Innocent! Innocent.
Thank you.
cats. The horses are hitched and they're ready to roll again.
Thank you, Zalman. Come, Chaim.
Yes, Father. I'll get the door.
Your noise, Fadden! Giddy up!
Why do they persecute us, Father?
Why, Chaim? It has always happened, ever since our father Abraham first rose up to proclaim the oneness of God. Egyptians, Babylonians, Persians, Romans. Now these people, and I fear others in generations to come. But when we hold fast to the faith of our fathers, God protects us.
And when we don't?
When we don't, we are lost.
But if everybody hates us...
No, son. Don't ever think that. We do have friends among the nations of the world, good people who recognize that we're different from them, but they accept us and they love us for who we are.
What about those who don't? What are we supposed to do when someone comes and tries to destroy us?
We pray for peace and prepare for war. And we search out our own deeds to see what we've done wrong. Whatever happens, we bless God for the bad as well as the good.
For the bad as well as the good. Which one did Aaron Gins get?
You'll soon see, Chaim. Let's continue the story of the last blood libel.
Rabbi Lo, you are more than welcome to see the prisoner, but I must tell you that we have an airtight case.
That's rather surprising, Inspector. You once confided to me that you never believed any of these blood libels.
True, but in this case...
Inspector, I've known Aaron Gins since he was a young man. He is incapable of committing such a hideous crime.
If you can prove that, Rabbi, I'll be the first to congratulate you. Ah, this is Gins's cell. Gins, you have a visitor.
Shalom aleichem, Reb Aaron.
Aleichem shalom, Rabbi.
Rabbi, I'll have to lock you in.
I understand.
Rabbi, I didn't do it.
You have to tell me you didn't do it. Don't I already know you didn't do it? What happened, Aaron? Who was this boy?
Ketzeleh.
Ketzeleh?
It's the only name we knew him by. He worked for me in the factory, and then later, after the accident, in my house.
What accident? Aaron, why don't you start from the beginning?
All right. Let me see. The first time I heard about him was one morning at my tannery. Two of my workers, Karl and Heinrich Koslowski, came up to the office to ask a favor.
Mr. Gins, we have this younger brother.
We wonder if you could give him a job.
He lives with
us. He's lived in an orphanage all his life.
An orphan? Well, bring him around. I'll try and fit him in somewhere. The boy was only 15 years old and of a pleasant disposition, so I gave him a job.
Mr. Gins, I've finished cleaning out the trash bins. Now what should I do?
You think you can move this pile of hides next to the tanning pit?
Sure I can.
Rezele, come out here quick.
What is it, Papa?
The Koslovsky boy. He runs and jumps around the factory like a cat.
A little Ketzeleh.
Yes, a little Ketzeleh. Then one day it happened. I asked him to deliver a work order.
Yes, sir, Mr. Gins. Right away.
Be careful, Ketzeleh. Hey, stay away from the pit.
Oh!
Razor, call the doctor.
What happened, Papa?
Ketzeleh fell into the pit. Everybody, help!
What happened?
It's your brother. He slipped and fell into the pit and cracked his head on the side.
Go! We gotta jump in and save him.
So what are you waiting for? Easy with him. Easy.
Let me through, please. Let me through.
Over here, Dr. Smolin. He fell into the pit. His head's bleeding.
This hand that I'm worried about. His two fingers are smashed beyond repair. Mr. Gins, have you a table in your office?
Yes.
I'm going to amputate these fingers immediately.
Amputate? You can't. He's just a kid.
If I don't, he may die.
Oh. Easy, my friend. You're going to be just fine.
What have you done to my hand? Carl, Heinrich.
Don't worry, Ketzeleh. I'll take care of you.
That's right, Gins. It's your responsibility now.
My what?
He had the accident in your factory. He's a cripple now because of you.
He's a cripple because of his own foolishness. Don't you tell me what my responsibilities are. I couldn't keep the boy on in the factory. He would have been a hazard to himself and to everyone else. So I took him home and gave him odd jobs around the house. I paid him room and board and half his original wages. Ketzeleh, tomorrow is our holiday of Purim. I'm expecting a large order of wine and liquor. See that it is delivered to the dining room.
A never saw you drink, Mr. Ginns.
Purim is the only day of the year I do drink. It's a mitzvah.
A mitzvah?
A commandment.
Why?
We'll talk about it another time.
Yes, Mr. Ginns.
The next day was Purim. Our friends and guests came from miles around. Like it says in the scroll of Esther, the Jews had light and joy and gladness and glory.
Papa, the children have prepared their own version of the Purim play.
Oh, they have they? Well, then, let's see it.
Once there was a king Achashverosh who ruled over 127 lands.
I need a new wife. Guards, bring me all the beautiful girls in my kingdom. Oh, there's the prettiest one. What's your name?
My name is Esther.
You will be my queen, Esther. What kind of people are you from?
My Uncle Mordecai told me not to tell you. Meanwhile, the wicked Haman... The wicked Haman, the advisor to the king, decided that he hated all the Jewish people.
I want you to kill all the Jewish people.
But why?
Because they're different.
Okay, kill them.
Meanwhile, the wise Jew Mordecai heard about Haman's plan.
Mordecai, what can we do?
We have to turn to the God of Israel. He will save us.
And the Jewish people turned to their God, and he saved them. And the wicked Haman and all his helpers got killed.
Every year from now on, we will celebrate this miracle with candy and cookies and gifts to the poor. We will call it Purim.
Yay!
Very good. I left out a few details, but it was very good.
We feasted and drank late into the night and fell finally into a deep, sweet slumber. Then the next morning...
Papa! Papa!
What is it?
Papa, we've been robbed! The silver is gone and so is Ketzalin.
All our precious silver, even the Shabbos candlesticks and my Kiddush cup and my prized silver pocket watch were missing. The next thing I know, I'm being arrested for murder.
Aaron Ginns, you'll have to come with us.
Rebbe, I'm worried. And not just for myself, but for my wife and family and the entire Jewish community.
Aaron, it was revealed to me that you will emerge victorious.
Come along, Ginns.
God will help, Reb Aaron. God will help.
Order in the court.
The prosecution calls Gustav Molnar to the witness stand. Tell me in your own words, Mr. Molnar, what happened on the night of March 28th?
My wife and I were returning home to our village from an evening spent in Prague. Along the way, we passed by the Jewish cemetery. It struck us both as strange that there would be people there at such a late hour.
Gustav, what's going on over there?
Oh, it looked like a couple of Jews burying a body. You there, what are you doing here at this hour?
Was? You verstehe nicht.
What did he say?
You think I know? Come on, let's go home. It's late.
You're sure they were Jews?
They were speaking Yiddish. Who else speaks Yiddish?
And you're sure they were burying a body?
I swear to it.
Thank you, Mr. Molnar. That will be all. The prosecution now calls Heinrich Kozlowski to the witness stand. Please tell the court your name.
Heinrich Kozlowski.
And your occupation is?
I'm a tanner. A work animal skin into leather.
Is it true that you worked at the tanning factory of the accused Aaron Ginns?
Yes, sir. For 12 years.
And your brother, the deceased, was also employed by Ginns, was he not?
That's right. Because of him, my brother became a sickly cripple.
I object, Your Honor.
Mr. Kozlowski, just answer the questions.
Heinrich, tell the court where you were on the night of March 23rd.
I was in a lot of places that night. Most of them were taverns. Then a few minutes after 11, my brother Carl and I decided to visit our younger brother at Ginns's house. As we approached the place, we heard the sounds of laughter. It sounded like a wild party. We figured it was some sort of holiday. We sneaked up to the house and peeked in through the living room windows.
L'chaim, everybody, l'chaim! I want to drink a toast to my lovely daughters and their learned and pious husbands. One at a time. L'chaim!
I never saw such drinking in my life.
Your Honor, it should be noted that the Jewish holiday of Purim is celebrated by the people intentionally drinking until they can no longer differentiate between a blessing and a curse.
Ketzaleh, your glass is empty.
It is? How did that happen?
Moshe, fill his glass up quick.
What is this stuff? It's good.
We call it Shlivovitz. It's 150 proof.
Oh, yeah? Well, prove it.
L'chaim, Ketzaleh.
Yeah, l'chaim.
Come on, everybody. There's something I want to show you down in the cellar.
Me too.
Especially you, Ketzaleh. Especially you.
We saw the whole group of them disappear down the stairway to the cellar. And that's the last time I ever saw my brother alive.
He's lying. It never happened like that.
And in summation, the prosecution contends that Aaron Gins and his three sons-in-law and their wives, in order to procure Christian blood for their Passover matzahs, did wantonly commit this horrible act of murder in the first degree.
The defendants will rise and face the bench. In view of the evidence presented, we find the defendants guilty of murder.
Yossele,
I don't understand it.
Aaron and his family should have been acquitted. If not through the normal course of justice, then by divine intervention. It means we haven't done enough for him ourselves. Now it begins. They have the excuse they were waiting for. Now they'll be roaming the streets of the Jewish quarter looking to goad us into fight. You had better go out and patrol and stop the trouble before it starts. There is only one thing to do. I must ask a Shilas Cholom, a dream request of heaven. I take this piece of parchment and a quill and ink and inscribe the mystical name of the Holy One, blessed be he. You, who are the heavenly angel, prince of the realm of dreams, I command you in the great and awesome name of Almighty God that my question be answered this night. How may I clear the name of Aaron and his family and protect my people from harm? Now to place this parchment beneath my head and... And here is the answer I received, Yasele. You will search and examine and investigate thoroughly, and the children will return to their borders. Well, we've been to every other town between Prague and Melnik. If this isn't it, we'll have to start all over. You there? Excuse me.
Yes?
Is there a Kozlovsky family in this village?
There's a Jadwiga Kozlovsky, an old woman. She lives in the shack out there at the edge of town.
Thank you kindly.
Who are you? What do you want with me?
We want to speak with you, Jadwiga.
Go away.
I am Rabbi Lowe. Are your sons here?
My sons are all in Prague, all three of them.
I see. When was the last time you saw them?
I haven't seen the older two in many years. It's been almost a year since the young one went to work with his brothers in the factory. I haven't seen him since he left. Now you go away and leave me alone.
That's right, Yosele. She's lying.
But now we can begin to figure what may have happened. It was the night of Purim. The Ginz family had fallen asleep. Katzler sees his chance. He steals all the household silver and runs off into the night. Where else would he come but here to his mother's house?
What are you doing here? I told you I can't afford to keep you. You eat too much.
Mother, let me in. I'm sick. I promise you won't have to worry about money anymore.
When Karl and Heinrich learned about their brother's disappearance and the missing silver...
Heinrich! Karl! Now you're here too. 10 years I don't hear a word from you, and now I've got all three of you.
Oh, so he is here.
Over there on the cot, burning up with fever.
Did he have anything with him when he came?
Oh, so you know about the silver, so that's why you came.
Where is it?
We know that the Kozlowski boy was very ill even before that night, and several days later he turns up in a shallow grave in a Jewish cemetery. It's a likely guess that running through the cold night killed him, and the brothers took his body to Prague. Josela, what's the matter? What are you pointing to? Ah, the front doors to? Clay. Thick gray clay. The same clay was on the floor inside the house as well. Where should a person pick up so much clay on his shoes? The cemetery. But why would they have come back here? Unless they first buried him somewhere nearby and then moved the body to Prague. Come, Josel.
Yeah, right over here is where all the bodies buried in the last 3 months are buried.
Are you sure?
To be. I dug every one of them graves myself.
Thank you.
Is that all you wanted?
Yes. And here is a few coins for your trouble.
Thank you.
Josel, here's where I really need your help. You should know that according to our sages, when a person dies, the soul does not completely depart from the body for 12 months. Until then, the soul hovers over the person's grave. If the Kozlowski boy was buried, then moved, that means that there is one grave here without a soul over it. Ordinary men cannot see these souls, but birds and animals can. And, Josele, so can you. I want you to tell me if any of the graves has no soul hovering over it. Are you sure? We've learned enough. We're going back to Prague.
Rabbi, you can't be serious. You really expect me to dig up a grave in the church cemetery because some poor mute imagines there is no soul there?
I know it sounds incredible, Inspector, but...
Incredible is hardly the word.
Please.
If you're wrong... We're going to look like a couple of fools.
But I'm not wrong. Aaron Ginz and his family are innocent. I can prove it.
There's no gravestone, Father. Do you happen to recall who's buried here?
As a matter of fact, several weeks ago, two men came seeking a burial for...
It's for our brother. We're not asking for anything fancy, Father. Just a simple grave.
I understand. And how do you expect to pay the expenses of burying your beloved brother?
Heinrich, the pocket watch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Father. This ought to cover everything.
I should think so. Where did you ever get a watch like this?
It belonged to our late father.
Here's the coffin, Inspector.
Open it.
Yes, sir.
Empty. Just as you said, Rabbi.
And I'm sure Aaron Ginz can identify the watch. Surely it's the one stolen from him.
So the Kozlowski brothers devised the entire plot against Aaron Ginz.
It's all very neat, except for one problem. What about the Jewish gravediggers who were seen burying the body that night? The only possible answer is that the witnesses were lying.
There's one other possibility. Karl and Heinrich posed as Jewish gravediggers. 12 years in Aaron Ginz's tannery taught them enough Yiddish to fool the passers-by.
Inspector, you're a wonder.
Maybe, but the judge won't be satisfied without a confession. Let's pay a little call on the Koslovsky woman.
I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't seen my son in over a year.
Maybe this will refresh your memory.
Oh, tell me! I'll tell you everything!
I know that today isn't Purim, but I want to drink a l'chaim anyway, to Rabbi Lowe.
And to Yasele, don't forget Yasele.
L'chaim! 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 Thanks to them, we're free men. Baruch Hashem.
What an amazing story, Father.
And a true story, Chaim.
What happened to the Kozlovsky brothers?
As soon as they heard that plot had been discovered, they both abandoned their families and ran away. They never were heard from since.
And it was the last blood libel?
Yes. Shortly thereafter, the Maharal wrote to King Rudolf of Bohemia.
And so I respectfully request an audience with His Majesty.
Ah, my good friend Rabbi Lowe, what a pleasure it is to see you again.
May the Almighty bestow His blessing upon you and all your kingdom.
We are indeed fortunate to be blessed by the rabbi whose fame has now spread throughout all Europe. But tell me, what is the purpose of your visit?
Your Majesty, help us. Please help us. We cannot live with this evil. You must put an end once and for all to these false accusations against my people.
Sit beside me, Rabbi Lowe, and weep no more. I will issue a decree this very day to ban forever the blood libel against the Jews.
They spoke together for a full hour, but the Maharal would never reveal the nature of the discussion. Then, one night, the Maharal's servant, Abraham, came to my room as I slept, much as he had once before.
Rabbi Katz? Rabbi Katz?
Yes, Abraham. What is it?
Your father-in-law wishes to see you at once.
I'll be right there.
Reb Yitzchak, Reb Yaakov, the danger of the blood libel is forever gone. And so we no longer have need of the golem. This night I command Yosele to take his bed from my study to the attic of the great synagogue and sleep there. Let us now remove the golem from the world.
We ascended the staircase to the attic of the Altnoy Shul, the Maharal leading the way. This time his servant Abraham accompanied us, carrying 2 lit candles. Yosele lay on his cot, asleep. Whereas before we stood at his feet and circled around him to the right, this time we stood at his head and circled to the left, each of us repeating the 10-word formula in reverse.
Yisroel torfe chaval, zaydim v'siksor, hachomer govuk golem oro ato.
Yisrael torfe chaval, zeidim v'sigzor hachoymer, dovek golem boro ato.
Yisrael torfe chaval, zeidim v'sigzor hachoymer, dovek golem. What was once Yosele the Golem now lay before us as a lump of clay in the shape of a man. Abraham removed the clothing and the cot from the attic and was instructed to burn them. Reb Yaakov and I draped the body in 2 tattered prayer shawls, binding them securely to the lifeless form, and then hid it under the large pile of torn, discarded prayer books. The next day, a rumor spread forth in the community.
Did you hear? The mute servant Yosele ran away.
Don't get excited. It was Bashert. It was meant to be.
And then, a couple of weeks later, after the interest in the golem's disappearance had died down, the Maharal decreed,
the attic in the great synagogue has become a fire hazard. From this day on, no one is to enter there.
And to Yaakov, Abraham, and me, he confided,
so long as I live, none may reveal the secret of the golem. for I fear that the people will glorify my powers. This was not my work, but the work of our Father in heaven, Almighty God.
Father, Father, that mountain, it looks like the one by our house.
You're right, it is. We'll be home right around the next bend.
Giddy-up! Ahoy, Sfaden!
Been listening to the program Human Machine on WGXC. Listen on Saturday mornings to subsequent episodes where we continue our conversation on the nature of being in an age of human machine evolution.